All right, I wanted to give a sermon today that is a challenge to give, and I'll tell you why it's a challenge in a moment. I'll also tell you why I decided on this particular topic. If you like titles, this is entitled The Spiritual Blessings of Age. The Spiritual Blessings of Age. Turn with me to Leviticus 19, chapter 32. Leviticus 19, verse 32. For those of you that grew up in the church, I did from the time I was about 5 or 6 years old. I had this read to me a lot by my mother. Now, as I think back on it, it probably was because I was such a brat that she felt I needed to hear this over and over again. But I had this read a lot to me. Leviticus 19, verse 32, it says, "You will rise before the gray-headed and honor the presence of an old man and fear the eternal your God. I am the Lord." Rising before the gray head. Whenever someone would walk in the room as a teenager, if an older person walked in the room, I had to stand up. I don't know if that's even taught anymore. Probably not. Most of the time, people don't even recognize that someone's walked in the room because their head's buried in their phone. But when I was young, I had to stand up when someone walked in the room that was my senior. We go through stages of life. We have relatively innocent childhood years. For some people, the teen years can be pretty turbulent. We springboard into young adults as we graduate from school. We had a couple of graduations just this week. We have productive middle-aged years where we hopefully are busy working and building our career. And then we go into our retirement years. And unless early death takes us, everyone goes through every one of those stages. So for those of you that are young right now, you will be old someday. That's just a part of life. That's how it happens. Why did I come up with this particular sermon topic today? On March the 25th of this year, so that wasn't that long ago, I was 59 years, 9 months, and 7 days old. That was how old my dad was when he died. 59, at age 14, I thought 50. He was an old man, right? I don't think that is old anymore. But boy, at the time, I sure did. My mother was just a couple of months shy of being 99 when she died. So, am I living on borrowed time, or do I still have 4 decades left? I don't know, and neither do any of you. But I got thinking about it. I was up in Ohio a couple of weeks ago at my brother's, and we got to talking about this. He's in his mid-70s now. And we were lamenting the fact that we had some of Dad's genes, because who knows what that's going to do to us, but glad of the fact that we have some of Mom's genes in us, so hopefully we'll at least split the difference, but we don't know. One of the challenges in giving a sermon on growing old is that it can elicit 2 very different responses from the crowd. One is, well, I'm young, and this is a sermon about old people, so I'm not going to listen. All you young people, don't do that. The other would be, my pastor's too young to know what it's like to get old, so I don't have to listen, and I hope that that doesn't happen either. Because there's some real value in the scriptures about aging appropriately, gracefully, and how to do that. For some people, the retirement years are freedom to do what they wanted to do when they had to work full-time. And they're excited about that. For those of you that know Jeanette and Hilford Jones in the Lowell congregation, they bought an RV, and they go 5 or 6 times a year. They're like, we're not going to be here this Sabbath, we're going off to some RV park. And they just have the time of their lives. When I gave this in Laurel last week, they started laughing as soon as I said travel in an RV. They knew immediately I was talking about them, because that's what they do. For some, they go on cruises. My wife and I have been here for 5 years. We're still trying to go on a cruise, and there's always something else that seems to take my money. But that's going to happen here one of these days. If finances allow, I know a lot of people that go on extended Feast of Tabernacles trips. We have people that go down to Orange Beach, and they'll rent a condo for a month. And they'll stay in a week or two after or a week or two before because they don't have to get back to a job. For some, they visit family without the burden of having to get right back to work. You know, grandparents can sometimes, if they're retired, they can go visit the grandkids and give their kids a break, which is a nice thing. I wish we could do more of that. There seems to be a sense of accomplishment that is a reward for a life of hard work. There actually is something in the Bible that talks about that. Now, you may laugh at this and say that 50 years old is not old, and I would agree with you, but turn back to Leviticus chapter 8, and I just want to read a concept here that God mentions in the Bible, something about having respect for those that have served long and hard. Leviticus chapter 8, I want to read verses 23 through 26. Verse 23. Oh, no, I did this again. I told Marlis, I said, I want to make sure that I get the scripture right because I have it wrong. Well, anyway, I'll just tell you the story because I don't know where it is. But anyway, the idea behind it was that for the Levites that were serving in the temple, they were not to start serving in the temple until they were 25 years of age. They needed to be mature enough to be able to handle the responsibilities of taking care of the sacrifices, the slaughtering of the animals, all of the things that had to do with either the tabernacle or the temple work. But at age 50, they were to be relieved of those responsibilities. Now, they were given other responsibilities to do, but they were to turn the heavy lifting over to those that were under 50. So at age 50, there was a sense of honor. They've served for 25 years in the tabernacle or in the temple, doing all of this work. And now they were given the honor of giving things to do that, like I say, weren't the heavy lifting. They were respected for what they did. That hopefully is how we feel as we enter our retirement years. I've still got 10 or so years to go, but I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to the time when I can maybe go on a cruise and get away for a little while too. But for others, this time of year can be a time of discouragement. It can be a time of challenges. You know, you were once very productive, and now all of a sudden you're not at work anymore. You can feel out of place in a technological world that is just absolutely flying. One of the things that I read, and I think I even gave this in a sermon here a while back, when a person starts college, the technology for the first year of college is no longer there by the time they graduate from college. So if they go into a tech school to learn something, by the time they're a senior, what they learned in their freshman year is no longer valid. I spent years in telecommunications. Telecommunications is nothing now like what it was. If I were to go back into telecommunications now, I've been out of it for 5 years, I would be totally lost. It has completely passed me, and I've only been out for 5 years. For some of us, perhaps the jobs that we did before retirement, those jobs don't even exist anymore. You think about the jobs, I was actually looking at pictures the other day when I was preparing this, about jobs that don't exist anymore. For those of you that may remember some of these, remember the milkman that would deliver milk to the door, or the people that would deliver ice to your house because the refrigeration was, you would put this block of ice in your refrigerator. That's a job that doesn't exist anymore. Turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 12. I want to read verses 1 through 5. But I'm going to read this from the Contemporary English Version. This is a paraphrase, but Ecclesiastes chapter 12, in verse 1 through 5. I had to laugh, and hopefully you'll find this kind of funny as we go through this, but Contemporary English Version of the Bible, Ecclesiastes 12, starting in verse 1. It says, "Keep your Creator in mind while you're young, because there's coming a time when you're going to be burdened down with troubles and say, I don't enjoy life anymore." Right? It sometimes can be like that. Maybe your health isn't what it used to be. Verse 2, "Someday the light of the sun and the moon and the stars will all seem dim to you." Mr. Diaz just went through cataract surgery. Hopefully, at least in one eye, he's better now. But, things aren't as bright as they used to be. "Rain clouds will remain over your head." Boy, this is, by the way, this was Solomon at a very bad stage in his life. Hopefully none of us feel like this, but he gets pretty dour here. "The stars will seem dim. Rain clouds will remain over you." Verse 3, "Your body will grow feeble. Your teeth will decay and your eyesight will fail." Wow, tough life. Verse 4, "The noisy grinding of the grain will be shut out by your deaf ears." There's just things you can't hear anymore. "And the singing of the songbird will keep you awake at night." I actually have, and I never know if I'm saying this right, it's either tinnitus or tinnitus, I don't know which it is, but I have ringing in my ears. I don't know how many of you have. And when I lay down at night and it's quiet at night, I hear that ringing, I hear my heartbeat, and it's annoying. We have a little sound machine that we put beside our bed now that has the sound of the ocean so that I don't hear that noise in my ears. The noisy grinding of grain will be shut out by your deaf ears, and even the song of the bird will keep you awake. Verse 5, you will be afraid to climb up a hill or walk down a road. You know what that's like? You know, even stepping off of a curb can be problematic for people. Your hair will turn as white as almond blossoms. Mine started turning when I was pretty young, either turning white or turning loose, one of the two. And then it ends by saying, you will feel lifeless and you will drag along like an old grasshopper. I don't know what old grasshoppers hop like, but evidently, again, that was Solomon at a pretty bad spot in his life. Hopefully we don't feel that way. But it happened to King David, too. Turn to Psalm 71. Psalm 71. And verse 9. I'll just kind of break into the thought here and just read. This is David kind of at a spot in his life where he was, I don't think he was feeling very useful as he was getting older. He said, don't cast me off in the time of my old age, and don't forsake me when my strength fails. David was saying, I still want to be useful. I'm getting older, and I think David was saying, I don't like it. And is there going to come a time, God, when you can't use me anymore? I mean, David as a young man was slaying Goliath, right? I mean, just you think about what he went through in life, and then all of a sudden he turns around and he realizes, I'm going to have to give all this over to Solomon, my son. And this is going to be, I think he was having a tough time of it. And he was asking God, don't cast me off when I'm an old man. I still want to be useful. For Christians, this time of year should not be a time of stagnation or discouragement. It actually should be a time of renewed spiritual strength. Spiritual strength. Maybe not physical strength anymore, but your spiritual strength should increase. There should be great joy and satisfaction with years of having had God's Holy Spirit. And we'll read some benefits to that. So what are the blessings of age? Mr. Cunningham mentioned in the sermonette today about some of the pagan gods. I did this week. I went out and I looked up pictures of pagan gods to see what they looked like. And it was interesting. Now, he's right. You know, you look at Baal and you've got these multi-headed things with, you know, rodents or frogs even. Some of them were frogs, just kind of bizarre pictures. But I also saw several of them that I thought were very interesting. How were the pagan gods often portrayed? Adonis, he was a Phoenician god. You remember Adonis? He had this long flowing hair. He was this handsome young man, right? Apollo was beardless, hairless, beardless. He was a youthful, you know, energetic, strong man. Agnes of Ireland, god of love and youth and beauty. Eros, Cupid, they all were pictured as young, strong, virile people. You do an intercept search on pagan gods and you'll see how they're depicted. Young, athletic, and virile. How does the true God picture himself? Let's look in the Bible at a couple of places. Daniel chapter 7 and verse 9. When God portrays himself to humans, how does he depict himself? Daniel chapter 7 and verse 9. This is Daniel having a vision, and as he considers this vision, he looks up and he realizes where he is. He's sitting before the throne of God, and notice what he says. He says, I watched until thrones were put in their place, and the Ancient of Days was seated. The old man took the throne. That's basically what he's saying. His garment was white as snow, and his hair as the hair, and his the hair of his head was like pure wool, and his throne was a fiery flame. So he's pictured as an Ancient of Days. He's pictured as having white hair. It's interesting, the pagan gods picture themselves, if you want to say that, as these youthful, you know, lusty, sometimes impetuous people. A god pictures himself as a mature, elderly person. Why would he do that? Let's look at Revelation chapter 1 and verse 14. John had a similar vision. Revelation 1 and verse 14. Lastly, start in verse 13. In the middle of the seven lampstands, there was one like the Son of Man, clothed with a garment down to his feet and girded about the chest with a golden band. But notice how he's pictured. His head and his hair were white like wool, as white as snow, and his eyes were like a flame of fire. His hair was white as snow. Reading from Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown, it's a commentary on the Bible. It talks about this section in Revelation. It says that often when you look at God depicted in the Bible, you see two things. You see the color red and the color white. So if you read it here, his hair was white like wool, but his eyes were as a flame of fire, red and white. It says, ordinarily, the jasper stone was a stone of various wavy colors and somewhat transparent. In the Bible, the sardis stone was always referred to as a fiery red. As the watery brightness or transparentness of the jasper, meaning white, represented God's holiness, so the fiery red identified him as a God of justice. The union of white, meaning righteous, and red, meaning just, appears in the scripture. That's how God portrays himself. Why does he have white hair? Why does he have a white robe on? Because white is the color of righteousness. It says that one of these days when we are in the kingdom of God, we will be given white robes. Why white? Because they're a symbol of righteousness. I think if we look at our seniors and we look at the people that have been around for a long time, you see something that God says, you know what? That's me. I'm this wise elderly gentleman, and I can give you righteousness and justice. While pagan gods are depicted as youthful and impetuous, our Heavenly Father reveals himself as an elderly man full of patience and wisdom and experience. So how should we see the aging process in our lives? And as important, how should we see the aging process in others? Some of us are young in this room. How do we look at our elders? How do we respect our elders? There are lessons for those of you who are in your youth, and there are elders, lessons for you if you are an elder. So what does God tell us about these various stages of life? I'd like to discuss three aspects of aging that I would like for all of us to consider, young and old alike. Three aspects of aging. Every time I do something like this, there probably are much more than 3 points, but I did a lot of reading, not only on the internet, but on Life Open Truth, and came up with several things that should reflect our lives as we age in the Church of God. The first point is, as we age, we should be continuing to fill ourselves with wisdom through experience. So one of the blessings of age is wisdom that comes through experience. And we have experienced a lot in our lives. By the time we reach 60, 70, 80 years old, we've gone through a lot. And that experience that we have can be very, very useful. Job chapter 12, in verse 12. Job chapter 12. In verse 12, a very simple statement, but one that is full of a lot of truth. It says, wisdom is with the aged man, and with length of days comes understanding. The New Living Translation says, wisdom belongs to the aged and understanding to the old. Why is that? Can you not be wise and be a young person? Well, we know that Solomon, as a young person, asked for wisdom, and he was given wisdom. How did he use it? By the time Solomon became an old man, he had made a lot of mistakes. How many mistakes have those of us in this room made as we grew up? Wisdom requires time and experience. It's not something that you're going to read in a book and get. It's not something that comes in a box of cereal that you pour milk on and all of a sudden you're wise. It comes with experience. The accumulation of experimentation. How many of you experimented in things that you were growing up? And some of them worked and some of them blew up in your face. How many of you had foolish risk-taking? He's not here, but I'll tell a story on Mr. Dunbar. He told this story where he was in his father's car once, and I don't know what it was a 1942 Hudson or something. And he was with a bunch of friends, and he was probably 16 or 17 years old, and they were going down a country road about 120 miles an hour. And all of a sudden, and they're laughing and having a good time, and all of a sudden he realized the road came to a T, and he slammed on the brakes and the car skidded sideways, and he said he stopped right before going into the ditch on the other side. He got out of the car and he looked, All of you young people that are learning to drive, please don't do this. He got out of the car and looked, and the tires on the Hudson had kind of, I want to say, kind of melted under the car all the way up to the hubcaps. He was going so fast sliding sideways that it's like they bent underneath the car. He's lucky to be alive. He doesn't drive like that anymore. Why? Because he learned. You know what I'm saying? You learn through experimentation. So sometimes you have, in your youth, you have foolish risk-taking. So when you get older, you recognize that you don't want to do that. And all of a sudden, you're trying to explain to your kids why they shouldn't do that, and they think you're old. Well, yes, you are, and that also means that you've got a lot of wisdom. Mistakes and experience and consequences. But you also have an accumulation of good choices. You made perhaps a good life choice here or there. You dated right, you married right, you got into a good career, and those things helped shape your experiences as well. You've faced trials, you've overcome loss. Those are things that build wisdom, things that you're not going to get out of a book. The result of years of being tempered by life and enlightened by God. I want to give you an example of this, and you may be ahead of me in thinking about this, but turn to 2 Chronicles chapter 10. 2 Chronicles chapter 10. And I want to start in verse 1. I'm going to read verses 1 through 15. David is dead. Solomon is dead. And Solomon turned reins of the kingdom over to his son, Rehoboam. Rehoboam is now king over all Judah and Israel. Verse 1. Rehoboam went to Shechem, to the north. For all Israel had gone to Shechem to make him king. So this should be a good time for Rehoboam. He's going up there. He's already been declared or crowned king of Judah. Now he's going to go up and Israel's going to do the same thing. Verse 2, so it happened when Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, heard, for he was in Egypt and had fled from the presence of Solomon. Jeroboam returned from Egypt. Verse 3, they sent for him and they called him. And Jeroboam and all Israel came up and spoke to Rehoboam. Now, notice what they're saying here. Your father made our yoke heavy. Why did Solomon do that? Solomon built a lot of buildings. He built not only the temple, but he built a house for himself. He built a house for most of his wives. He built a special house for the daughter of Pharaoh because she wasn't an Israelite. There were places that she wasn't allowed to go, so he built a special house for her. You can read in the Bible where he sent off to Hiram and asked for all this lumber and timber and stuff to come down because he had all these building projects. Well, how do you pay for that? You tax your people. And so Solomon heavily taxed his people. Your father made our yoke heavy, verse 4. Now, therefore, lighten the burdensome service of your father and his heavy yoke which he put upon us, and we will serve you. So what are they asking? Less taxes? Less taxes. We're going to crown you king here, but here's what we would like in the process. Would you please not have any crazy building projects like your dad did? That's what they're asking for. So he said to them, come back in 3 days. And so they departed. He's going to give it some thought. Verse 6, then King Rehoboam consulted the elders, the people who had been around, probably with Solomon, maybe even some of them with David. They consulted the elders who stood before his father Solomon while he still lived, saying, how do you advise me to answer these people? Good choice. Rehoboam is young and he's inexperienced. So what does he do? He calls the elders and he asks their opinion. What's the wise thing to do? Verse 7, they spoke to him and said, if you are kind to this people, in other words, if you're listening to what they're saying, and if you please them and you speak good words to them, they will be your servants forever. In other words, you know what? They're saying a good thing here. They're not asking for a lot. They're just asking for you to lower the taxes somewhat for them, and they'll serve you. Verse 8, but he rejected the advice of the elders, which they had given him, and he consulted instead with young men who had grown up with him and stood before him. Now, there's a clue here. Stood before him means they work for Solomon. So what are they paid with? Taxes. What's their advice going to be? How should we answer this people that say, lighten the yoke which your father has put upon us? Verse 10, the young men who had grown up with him and spoke to him said, thus you shall speak to the people. My little finger shall be thicker than my father's waist. Your father made our yoke heavy. Yeah, Sorry, I'm right in the middle of a verse here. Let me go back and just read verse 10. The young men who had grown up with him spoke to him, saying, "Thus you should speak to the people who have spoken to you, saying, 'Your father made our yoke heavy, but you make it lighter for us.' Thus you shall say to them, 'My little finger shall be thicker than my father's waist. Now, whereas my father put a heavy yoke on you, I will add to that burden. My father chastised you with whips, but I will chastise you with scourges.'" In other words, I'm going to increase the taxes. That was what the young men wanted. Why? Maybe I'm reading into it, but I would speculate that the young men who were paid out of the taxes wanted to make sure that they lined their pockets at the expense of other people. That's not wisdom. That's young and foolish. Solomon had people with him and he surrounded himself with people that would help him make wise decisions, and those people were still there for Rehoboam. The older advisors realized that riches weren't as important as relationships. Now, when you get past the age of money making, for whatever it's, sometimes we realize that money has a different look when you're older and you're more retired. The older men had seen the results of bad decisions that David and Solomon had made, and they were trying to steer Rehoboam in the right direction. He just simply wouldn't listen. The older people that were advising him were more calm and reflective. They were long-suffering. They could wait long and patiently. And that patience was a trait that they developed through the years. I tried to look this up to see who this was, and this could just be a wives' tale, but I was told at one point in time that someone like a Rockefeller or someone that was a rich man had one time been quoted as saying, "I would give up all my wealth for one happy marriage." That's someone in his later years that realized he made a lot of mistakes in his younger years. Wisdom through experience, brethren, that is something that we should be able to do as we grow in the church. We should be learning to be long-suffering, learning to be patient, not to be impulsive like the younger Christians are, and to be able to set that example for them, wisdom through patience. Proverbs chapter 20, in verse 29. Proverbs 20, verse 29. If there is a truism in the Bible, this one is definitely one of them. "The glory of young men is their strength, but the splendor of an old man is his gray head." When you're young, what do you revel in? You go to the gym, you're pumping iron. I can remember in Southern California where we had the beach that we would go to all the time. These guys just loved to go to the beach with these muscle man t-shirts on. And, you know, why were they doing that? Because they were showing off their glory. "I am strong. I'm this manly man, and I can take care of anything." The glory of young man is their strength. You think of the Olympics, and the runners used to be the men in Greece, and they were proud of their bodies. In fact, they ran in the nude, and that was this glory of youth, this excitement about all of the power and all of the might and all of the majesty. "But the splendor of an old man is his gray head." What does that mean? The splendor, the happiness that should come from age is this wonderful wisdom that they have through experience. As we age, we replace physical strength with spiritual strength. And as you age in the church, you need to be replacing your physical strength with your spiritual strength. You've got the time to study and pray. You've got the time to get on your knees before God. You've got the wisdom and the experience to talk to God, and He can give you even more as we age. Wisdom through experience helps us see and become more like God. So point one, again, we gain wisdom through experience. Point two, we learn, and one of the spiritual blessings of age is to gracefully accept the positive aspects of life. To gracefully accept the positive aspects of life. Have you ever had a young person come and talk to you about what they should do? I would hope that all of you do that. All of you young people that are considering a career or going to college or whatever, not only sit down and talk to your parents, but if you've got grandparents to talk to, or even some of the people in the church that you know and trust, sit down and talk with them. They can help you in gracefully accepting the positive aspects of life. Age should bring a level of authority, of maturity, and of mellowing through experience. Through youth, we tend to be driven by this temporal idea of getting ahead and making a lot of money. But our seniors can teach us things that perhaps we can't see ourselves when we're young. They can teach us not to be attracted by power or by prestige or by looks. You know, everybody's into looks these days. Going down the road, and I see all these things along the way on when I'm going from here to Hammond. There's billboards on liposuction and all of this kind of stuff. That's fleeting, I'm telling you. But there's some people that look at that and think, I have to dress a certain way. I've got to have a certain style of handbag, right? Our elderly people can help us understand that there is more value in friends and in our relationship to our Creator God than in wealth and in beauty. Turn to Proverbs chapter 16. Proverbs 16 in verse 25. I'm going to start with a verse that we all know, but I want to put it in a context of what's being said here. Every one of you is going to know this first verse, but when I read the verses after that, you might think, well, I've never seen that before. We often will quote verse 25 out of context. Proverbs 16, verse 25. There is a way that seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death. Everybody knows that. But let's put it in context. What is he talking about? Verse 20, he's going to start making a comparison between the choices that we make when we're young and the things that we get embroiled with in life. And then he's going to make a comparison to the aged that we have around us. Verse 26, the person who labors, this is going to be a young person, labors for himself, for his hungry mouth drives him on. You know, you're married and you've got 5 kids and you've got to work. You have no choice. And that drives you, right? Well, that's not necessarily a bad thing, but what can happen? Verse 27, an ungodly man will dig up evil. And on his lips will be like a burning fire. A perverse man will sow strife, and a whisperer will separate the best of friends. There are a lot of things in life that can steer us in the wrong direction. Satan is not here to see that you get on the right path. He's here to make sure that you've got an alternate path to go on, and he's going to try and steer you down it. As young people, sometimes we can get enticed by that. Verse 29, a violent man entices his neighbor and leads him in a way that is not good. He winks his eye to devise perverse things, and he pursues his lips and brings about evil. But notice what he says in verse 31. But the silver head is a crown of glory if it is found in the way of righteousness. The silver head, the older person that's had all of this experience, if that person stays in the paths of righteousness, and that's what I'm saying, you need to replace your physical strength with your spiritual strength, then you can help those people that there is a way that may seem right to a man, but the end is the ways of death. If a younger person is starting to head in a wrong direction, an older person can often step in and say, I went down that path. You do not want to go down there. The end of that path is bad news. Listen to me. Let me tell you a story. And for that, I want to tell a story. When I was in Dallas, and this was probably about 15 years ago, Mr. Horchek did something that was very interesting. We had, when you're in a church that has, at the time, 400 or 500 people, we probably had 110 teenagers. So we had a pretty interesting youth group. And there was one day when we were going to have a teen Bible study. So all the teens were excited. They you know, rushed into this separate room, and they're going to have their own Bible study. And instead of Mr. Horchek getting up and talking, an elderly lady, her name was Louise Wynant. I don't know if any of you know her. She's or knew her. She's long since died. She walked up very slowly with a cane to the stage, and there was a chair and a microphone. And she sat down, and she said, Mr. Horchek asked me to talk to you today. And all she did for the entire, and as soon as she said that, you saw all these teenagers going, rolling their eyes, and just like, oh, you know, this old person. But when she started talking about when I was a kid, we didn't have indoor plumbing. We had outhouses. And she described it in detail. And all of a sudden, it got pretty quiet in there. She talked about horses and buggies. They didn't have cars back then. Mother told me the story. Mom's obviously dead now. She told me the story when they first got a Model T. Mom was a teenager. And they couldn't, they lived up on the top of a hill, and they couldn't get the car up the hill because the gear ratio was so bad. So Grandpa would have to put the car in reverse and back it up the hill because the reverse gear was geared down to where you could do that. But anyway, Mrs. Wynant goes on. She talked about horse and buggy. She talked about what it was like to not have electricity. Certain times of the day, you open the windows to get airflow through, and there are certain windows that you open, the ones that are not in the sunlight and all of this, to be able to get an airflow. She talked about storing meat in salt and burying it in the ground. And you see all these kids going, ooh, that, you know, wouldn't it go bad? No, there's a way to keep things fresh and going. Kids didn't have any idea. She talked about canning to survive the winter, because the crops grow in the summer season, and you had to, if you wanted to live in January with 2 feet of snow on the ground, you lived on the food that you canned the rest of the year. The only time they went to the store was for flour, sugar, coffee, the things that they didn't, you know, grow themselves, but the majority of it they did themselves. You could have heard a pin drop for the entire time. The kids were fascinated by it. After that, most teens had never even thought to talk with her. But after that, the teenagers would go up to her and talk to her every Sabbath, and they would ask her, well, what was it like? I can remember as a kid going into my grandmother's basement, because she had a treasure trove of stuff that she probably thought was junk. You know, the old wash machines that had the wringer, right? You know what I'm talking about? Some of you were thinking, what? You know, to get the water out, you didn't have a spin cycle, because there wasn't that type of thing. Her wash machine was electric, but it just washed, and then they just sat in this tub of water, and you had to pull the plug and drain the water out, and then all these clothes are soppy wet, and you got to put it through a wringer before hanging it out on a limb. I saw something on the internet the other day that I thought was fascinating, and I actually think it was Linda Morgan that put it on her Facebook page. She said, list something here that the younger generation will have no idea what you're talking about. And the list was amazing. You saw things like rumble seat, right? There's probably kids back there going, I have no idea what a rumble seat is. Trying to think of what some of the other things were said. 78s. You know what a 78 is? You know, you had 33 and a third and 45s, but before those were 78s. My dad had a whole pile of them. I wish I had them now. They're probably worth a lot of money. The old Victrolas, even the old radios that had tubes in them, you know, where you would turn a radio on and often you'd hear a buzzing in the background as the tubes started to warm up. My first guitar amplifier was a tube amp, and it buzzed, and it had a wonderful sound. I just used to love the sound of that. Now everything's all solid state. What things can you, running boards, you know what I mean when I say a running board? Suicide doors. Actually, I think they're coming back now. I think that Ford may be reintroducing those. You can probably sit down and think about all of these things that your kids would have absolutely no idea what you're talking about. Marlis and I, even when we grew up and we're still relatively young, we both had party lines. You know what a party line is? If Marlis had an old telephone that was on the wall that had a, you know, it wasn't the old crank thing. It had a dial on it, but it was an old telephone on the wall. How many of you grew up and can tell stories of what it was like growing up at a time before iPads and cell phones? And, you know, the very first date that I went on when I was 16, it was a car date. I drove to a movie, and a girl and I went into the movie. When we came out, it had been snowing while we were in the movie, and I didn't know it. I'd never driven in snow before. So I had to find a payphone, because there was no such thing as a cell phone. I had to find a payphone and call her dad, because I was supposed to have her back at 11:30. And I called him out of self-preservation. And he met me at the door when I got home, but about midnight, because I probably drove about 20 miles an hour all the way home. I was just scared to death. And he met me at the door and he said, you can date my daughter anytime, because I had the presence of mind to call him, right? But I had to find a payphone. They even say that there's a period of time where the movies change, like chase scenes. Because now when you're in a chase scene, you can just pull your cell phone out of your pocket and call for help. But there used to be, in chase scenes and movies, that if they wanted help, they had to stop and get a payphone. And they often would stop, and then the receiver would be gone or something, and they'd panic and get back in their car and try and find the next. It would be fun sometimes to just sit down. Those of you that are young, go to your grandparents and ask them, what was it like growing up before all of this technology took over. What was that like? You will find it fascinating to be able to find out how these people actually survived, right? Very interesting. She had recounted her conversations out to the teens, but she didn't stop with that. Then she started talking about how God had never forsaken her all those years in the church. And she told a story, and this was the neatest story. She said there was a family that started to attend, and they were living in Terrell. For those of you that don't know anything about the Dallas area, Terrell's now with the freeway about 25 miles out of Dallas, but at the time there were no freeways, so it was about an hour out. And they were an elderly couple, and they didn't have their own car, and there was nobody that lived out that direction. So the church started to pray for some way for this elderly couple, to be able to get to church every week. So her and her husband decided that they would fast about it. And this is when she was in her probably 30s. So they fasted about it, and I even think it probably was the next day. She went to the grocery store, and as she was checking out, the lady behind the grocery store counter said, "Aren't you Mrs. Wynant?" And she said, "Yes." She'd never met this girl, didn't know who the girl was. And she said, "You won." She said, "I won what?" She goes, the drawing. You put your name in this drawing, and we you won." Mrs. Wynant never put her name in a drawing. Guess what? First prize was a car. Not only a car, a station wagon, where you could pack a lot of people in it. So they got this station wagon. They went home. I think they recognized God has given us a blessing. From there on, for the next 15 or 20 years, they drove to Terrell, picked this couple up, and brought them to church. Stories like that, you don't hear them anymore. And that's too bad, because we could listen to those stories and we can recognize those people that have grown up in the church at a time when it was pretty tough. I mean, there were, talking about feast sites with 15,000 people in it, that we don't even have 15,000 people in Cogwa today. When Marlis and I first started coming to church, there were that many people. Song service was phenomenal. And then you would go back to your local church area with 50 people and you were afraid to sing because you were so used to having 15,000 voices. It's just amazing. Isaiah chapter 46. Isaiah 46 in verse 4. Notice what God promises us at each stage in our lives. Isaiah 46 and verse 4. This is a promise from God. "Even to your old age, I am He, and even to gray hairs, I will carry you. I made you, and I will bear you, and I will carry you, and I will deliver you." Even into old age, He'll never give up. He, as the Ancient of Days, is full of wisdom. He is full of compassion. He is full of growing gracefully, if you want to say it that way. And He can help teach us. He will never, ever get rid of us. Our elderly people can teach our younger people that because you've lived through it. You've experienced a lot of that. And even for those people who may be suffering from some disability or trial or whatever in your life, some of our older people are, I think of Mrs. Shirley Davis. She's in a nursing home. She has fibromyalgia so bad, and she got into a car accident 15 years ago or so. She can't even get out of bed. She's been in bed for probably the last three or four years, unable to get up. Marlis and I go see her every once in a while in the nursing home, and we go there thinking we're going to cheer her up. We come away cheered up. She's just happy. She can't do anything. She just lays there in her bed, but she's got books, she's got crossword puzzles, she's got her computer and the internet. She's really good at the internet, surprisingly enough, and she's researching things, and she's just bubbling, and she's got all these fun things to talk about. God has never forsaken her, even though she is unable to even get out of bed. Psalm chapter 92. Psalm chapter 92, and let's start in verse 12. Psalm 92 and verse 12. "The righteous will flourish like a palm tree and will grow like a cedar in Lebanon. Those who are planted in the house of the Eternal will flourish and in the courts of their God, and they will bear fruit in their old age, and they will be fresh and flourishing. To declare that the Eternal is upright, that he is a rock, and there is no unrighteousness in him. If you grow up in the courts of God, in the church of God, when you reach that age, as verse 14 says, you will still bear fruit even in old age. What kind of fruit is that? Verse 15, you will be able to declare the Eternal is upright. The value that you have to the congregation in telling stories, like what Mrs. Wynant told us. We all have stories. I have stories of where I know an angel protected us in the car. A lot of you have stories like that. Pass those stories on to people. Let them hear. The value that you bring will help them to gracefully accept the positive aspects of life. Point number three. The elderly people in the Church of God are a blessing to the church. I not only want to read some scriptures on this, but I want to talk a little bit about this. Though our elderly may be limited physically, their power to contribute to the church is a way in which most younger Christians can't. Most who have been in the church for years have come to recognize the wisdom of turning to our senior citizens in a time of need. I used to do that in the Dallas congregation when things weren't well, having trouble with the job or whatever. I had a couple of widows that I used to call and say, hey, I need your prayer. Because you know what? God listened to them. I wasn't sure he always listened to me. But there were a couple of ladies that they were on it. You know, got it. Take care of it. Done. Just consider it done. And they were right. And all of a sudden something marvelous would happen because I had some widows praying for me. The blessing that they bring to the church is undeniable. Psalms chapter 71. Verses 17 and 18. Psalm 71, verses 17 and 18. We read something similar to this earlier, but I wanted to read through what it is saying here that we in the church as we age can do. Those of us that have been, most of our senior citizens have been in the church for a long, long time. And they've got a lot of wisdom. Verse 17, O God, you taught me from my youth, and to this day I will declare your wondrous works. I've grown up in the church. Most of us have. We have learned a lot over the last 20, 30, 40, 50 years. Probably some have been in the church longer than 50 years. And God has taught you. Verse 18, now when I am old and gray-headed, don't forsake me until I declare your strength to this generation. That's the job of the elderly, is to help the younger generation with their wisdom, with their experience, with their graceful age. God has taught me from my youth, and when I am old and gray-headed, he expects me to turn around and pass that information on to the next generation. That's how this church will stay strong. This church isn't going to stay strong by the young people devoid of the wisdom of the aged. The aged are there for a reason in the church. They are a blessing to the church. The job of our elderly is to show the young people the ropes, the trials and the pitfalls. Maybe you can't go out and run the hurdles with them, but you can tell them how to run the hurdles. You ever see the movie, Chariots of the Gods? Was that Chariots of Fire, where the old Jewish man is trying to teach this younger guy how to run. He couldn't do the running anymore, but he would put those coins out, and he would say, as you're taking strides, you need to be hitting these coins. Your strides aren't long enough. This was a man who probably ran in his youth, couldn't do it anymore, but he could teach the young how to do it. That's our job. The prayers of our elderly are sincere, they're fervent, and they're effective. Their intercessions before God do avail much. And if you have trouble, young people, go to the elderly and ask them to pray for you. Because I guarantee you God hears their prayers. 1 Timothy chapter 5. 1 Timothy chapter 5. And we'll start in verse 1. Young and old alike, here's how we should be treating each other. In fact, the heading over chapter 5 in my Bible says, the treatment of church members. This is how you treat people. Chapter 5 and verse 1. Don't rebuke an older man, but exhort him as a father. What does exhort mean? Exhort, that word means to call near, to invite, or even to call for comfort. Don't rebuke an older person. In other words, if you're a younger person, don't say, oh, you're too old to give me any advice. Don't rebuke him, but call him, invite him, ask him to pray for you. That's what this verse is saying. Don't shun an older person. Go to an older person and ask questions. Get wisdom from them. Exhort him as a father, younger men as brothers, older women as mothers. If you're a new and expectant mother, where do you want to get your advice? Do you want to get your advice from Cosmopolitan magazine? No. You want to get your advice from people that have gone through it, right? The wisdom that comes with age. Younger women as sisters with all purity. Verse 3, honor widows who are really widows. And we have widows in this church. We have widowers in this church. They have value. Notice what he says. Let me find this specific spot. Verse 5. Now she who is really a widow and left alone, what does that person do? She trusts in God with continues in supplications and prayers night and day. You know, there are times when perhaps when you reach a certain age, you don't sleep as well as you used to. Well, guess what? You can get up and you can pray until you get sleepy again and you want to go back to bed. They have the time to give supplications and to give prayers. I'd like to read a story in the Bible. There's only 3 verses in the Bible about this woman. But what it said in those 3 verses is amazing. And I hope to be able to talk to her one of these days. Luke chapter 2, I'd like to read the story of Anna. Luke chapter 2, verses 36, 37, and 38. That's all we get. We've got no more than just those 3 verses, but there's a lot packed in here. Luke chapter 2, verse 36. Now there was one, Anna, a prophetess, the daughter of Phanuel of the tribe of Asher, and she was of great age. Sometimes when you're young, you can look at someone and realize just how old they seem. She was of great age. She had lived with a husband for 7 years from her virginity. In other words, she was married and her husband evidently only lived for 7 years. And this woman had been a widow of about 84 years. Now, there are some scriptures, there are some translations that say she was a widow for 84 years, which means she would have been in her 90s or 100s. But other translations say that she was 84 years old and had been a widow for a long time. So whatever, this woman was of an age where she had been a widow for a long time. Verse 37, that she was a widow for about 84 years. Notice what she did. She didn't depart from the temple, but served God with fastings and prayers night and day. And coming in that instant, she gave thanks to the Eternal and spoke of him to all those who looked for redemption in Jerusalem. I want to look through some of the things that this lady did, this Anna. What she was doing, she actually saw the child, Jesus, as he was brought to the temple. And as a prophetess, she recognized who he was. But look at what it says that she did. Was Anna ever too old to serve God? She was able to bear heavy burdens? No. Could she remodel homes? No. Could she set up chairs at services? Probably not. That wasn't her job anymore. That was for the younger people. But what could she do? Let's look again at what it says. She didn't depart from the temple. Well, we don't have a temple anymore, but we've got the throne of God. She never departed from the throne of God, never left serving God for her own pleasure. She was always there. She would go to the temple every day, and she would do what she could. Perhaps what she could do was to talk, and you're going to see that in a little while. She would talk to people about things. There's the value that she has. She didn't depart from the temple. She served God with fasting and prayer. Again, elderly's prayers get heard. I'm telling you, the people that go before God that have been at this for 50 years, God listens to them. Served God with fasting and prayers, always able and ready to beseech God on behalf of others. It said that she was there night and day. There's no 40-hour a week like we do, right? We work 8 to 5 Monday through Friday, and then we go home at 5 and turn the TV on or whatever. This lady was at it all the time, night and day. Someone once asked the elderly Mrs. Armstrong, who was on the Pasadena campus, I was talking to a friend who actually had asked her this. I don't know that this got ever reported in a magazine or whatever, but she went up to Mrs. Armstrong and just asked her the question. She said, how long is your long prayer of the day? It's a simple question. She was asking an elderly lady in the church, how long do you pray? Probably in her mind, the college student was thinking, well, maybe I can get an idea of, because obviously Mrs. Armstrong's heard by God, so let me get some advice from this elderly lady. Mrs. Armstrong looked a little surprised, she said, and she replied back. She said, sweetheart, I pray all day long. I don't have a long prayer of the day. I don't stop. I pray when I'm walking. I pray when I'm going, when I'm cooking, when I'm cleaning, when I'm ironing. If I'm awake, I'm praying. That's the job of an elderly person, to continue in developing the spirituality and also to give advice to young people. You know, prayer should not just be, okay, I get up, I brush my teeth, I get down on my knees, I say a 5-minute prayer, and then I go to work and I don't have to think about prayer anymore. No, the prayer should be on your mind all day long. That's what she was teaching this young lady. Notice what else it says about Anna. It says she spoke to those who looked for redemption in Jerusalem. She was always ready to teach the younger people about what she had learned in life. Instant with stories. The people that have been around for a long time have got a lot of great stories. And yes, sometimes you hear the same stories over and over and over again. Yes, that's true. But there's value in them if you listen to them. Their prayers are like sweet incense that rise before the throne of God. He values their requests, and the church reaps the benefits of their righteousness and their intercessions, just like Anna. In all of God's congregations, there are many wonderful and very special elderly brethren that add very much to our family. They are what we wish to become, and we should honor them with their presence. We know that there will come a time in the future when they will receive their glorious crowns, and we will receive our glorious crowns. And maybe they have a few years left, and maybe we've got decades left. But we all are going for the same goal. They're just closer to it than we are. To the youth in God's church today, remember what I read, and I won't turn back there for the sake of time, but remember what I read in Leviticus 19, verse 32. Rise before the gray head. Literally, I would encourage you, if you're sitting down and your grandparents walk in the room, stand up. Stand up. Honor them. Job chapter 32, verse 4. I wanted to read this. This is the story of Elihu. Job 32 and verse 4, just a simple verse. Job 32 and verse 4. There's a lot of things in the book of Job you've got to be careful as you read through it, because there's a lot of nonsense in there about these guys talking about God. But it says in Elihu, now because they were years older than he, Elihu waited to speak. What is he saying there? You know, sometimes, young people, it's better to just listen instead of, young people are quicker at thoughts. Their thoughts come quicker. It takes me a long time to get a word out. Sometimes I've got a word that I'm trying to get out of my mouth, and I can't find the right word. There's too much scrambled up juice up there, and I can't find it. As we get older and older, maybe we're not the fastest thinkers in the world, but we'll get there. And if you'll just stop talking and listen, there's value. Listen. Elihu knew that. He had things to say. I'm sure that as Job and his friends were talking, his mind was firing, and he had a lot of, but he had respect for the elders, and he listened, so that when it came time to talk, he did, and he kind of rebuked them, but he listened, he waited. Learn to slow down and listen. That'll save a lot of bad decisions on your part. A couple of quotes that I thought were interesting. This one is from Dwight Moody. He says, preparation for old age should not begin later than your teen years. A life which is empty of purpose until 65 will not suddenly become filled with purpose on retirement. That's great advice. That's advice from an elderly man who recognizes if you sit on your hands when you're young, when you're 65 and you want to retire, you're going to sit on your hands because that's what you learned. But if you were active and you were doing things when you were younger, when it comes time to retire, you'll retire gracefully and with things to do. You'll retire with projects. When you're young and planning your life, don't be like Rehoboam and just talk with your friends. Include the elders in your decisions. To the elders in the church, and we have several in this room right now, let me read a couple of scriptures that God says about you. Proverbs chapter 16 in verse 31. Proverbs 16 and verse 21. Oh, sorry, Proverbs 16 and verse 31. I read this earlier, but I want to say it again. The silver-haired head is a crown of glory if it is found in the way of righteousness. As you age in the church, if you keep yourselves on the paths of righteousness, if you keep yourselves heading in the right direction, your gray hair will be a crown of glory to the church. It won't be a nuisance. It won't be a problem. It will be a crown of glory. I used to hear my mom say all the time, I've reached that age where I am a burden to you. And it used to irritate the fire out of me when she said that because she was not a burden. There was value in having her even living at the house. And it was tough sometimes. But there was value that she added. She had a strength of character that I didn't have, even at age 45 or 50, because she had gone through so many experiences. If you keep yourselves in the paths of righteousness, your gray head, your white hair, will be a crown of glory. And Titus chapter 2, let's look at one more for this section. Titus chapter 2, starting in verse 2. Titus 2 and verse 2. To the elderly in the church, Titus tells you, older men, you need to be sober. You need to be reverent. You need to be temperate. You need to be sound in faith. You need to have love, and you need to have patience. By the time you reach that age, you should have developed patience. You should be temperate. Verse 3, the older women likewise. They should be reverent in behavior, not slanderers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things. What you can add to the younger people in the church is amazing. Verse 4, that they admonish the younger women to love their husbands. Young people, if you're on the front edge of marriage or dating, talk to people that have been married for 40 or 50 years and ask them what works and what doesn't. Believe me, they'll tell you the things that don't work. You know, we can do that. We understand things because we've seen it. You want to know, again, how to have a happy marriage? Don't read about it in a magazine. That's going to give you the wrong advice. Talk to someone who's been there. That they admonish the young women to love their husbands and to love their children, to be discreet and chaste and homemakers and good and obedient to their husbands, that the word of God may not be blasphemed. That's what an elderly woman can teach our young women. For all of us, I have a couple of reminders, two final scriptures. This is something that God tells us. Isaiah chapter 40. In verse 31. Two more scriptures. Isaiah 40 in verse 31. Those of us in the church, I want you to recognize what God says that he will do for us. Isaiah 40 verse 31. To those who wait on the eternal, to those who stay in the paths of righteousness, they will renew their strength. They will mount up with wings like eagles. They will run and not be weary, and they will walk and not faint. Those of us who are in the church now, if we keep ourselves in the Lord, if we keep ourselves following the way of God, we'll run and never grow weary. That's a spiritual analogy, not a physical analogy. As you age gracefully in the church, if you stay close to God, you will continue to grow. You will run and not be tired. You will run and not get weary. The spiritual strength in you will stay. And finally, in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, 2 Corinthians 4, verses 16 and 17, our last scripture. This is another promise from God and something that we all need to realize. It says, therefore, we don't lose heart, even though our outward man is perishing. And as we get older and older, things just stop working, right? Like we read earlier from Solomon's writings, you know, the body wears out, the teeth stop working. It's harder to see, it's harder to hear. Even though our outward man is perishing, yet the inward man is renewed day by day. You're never too old to be a spiritual giant. You're never too old to be able to pass along the wisdom to others. Verse 17, for our light affliction, which is but for a moment, is working for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. That's what we need to be focused on, brethren. Let's not get discouraged as our outwardly bodies start to wear out, because our inward bodies, our inward spirit should be renewed day by day. Whatever suffering we have is temporary. What it will produce is eternal life, and that's the goal. That's the goal for all of us. For some, the journey to the kingdom of God is just starting. You're young, you're new in the church, you're growing, you're learning, you're in school. For others, the journey perhaps has been a pretty long one. Maybe you've been at this for a long, long time. Wherever you are on the timeline, learn from your experiences and grow. Learn from the experiences of others and grow. And honor those who have come before us.